Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, John?
The island.
Look, you want to push the button? You do it yourself.
If it's not real, then what are you doing here, Jack? Why did you come back? Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Why do you find it so easy?
It's never been easy!
It's a leap of faith, Jack.
Two players. Two sides. One is light. One is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
We're going to need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and in honor of this week's episode and found, I'm going to ask what object that you lost still stings the most, like Jack's poor replicated sock drawer ring. Mine are my original comic book Spider-Man collection, which was lost in a move. I think my mom might have thrown them away, but she listens to this podcast and I gave her enough grief, so I don't blame her for it anymore, but I still wish I knew where they were.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and the thing that I most regret losing is I had my car broken into a long time ago, but it was in between moves. They stole everything out of my car that was still in my car, and why it hurts is because what they stole meant was of no value to anyone but me. But they stole my ukulele that I got in Hawaii. They stole all of my art that I had been like collecting up until then. It was just all like really personal stuff that had like no street value. They left my DVD player, which is like possibly the only thing that could have had value. And I was like, this just felt personal. I felt attacked. So I've slowly tried to replace the art pieces that I lost, but haven't been able to make it all come back. So that was a deeply personal loss for me.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I had to admit to losing something that still stings, I think I had this stuffed E.T. doll from when E.T. came out, the movie, and it was really cool, and I didn't think of it much when I lost it, I guess, because it probably also got lost in like a move or like a cleaning out of a closet, but I found out later it would have been worth like a ton of money because it was like a collector's item, but it was just like my favorite E.T., so, R.I.P. that guy.
No! E.T. and stolen Honda things and Spider-Man comics all like rings in this week's episode of Lost. We are up to Season 2, Episode 5, .. And if you don't know how this podcast works, because maybe this is your first time, maybe you like jumping in at the fifth episode of season two of things. I don't want to yuck anyone's streaming, watching yum. This podcast is split into two different parts. The first part, it's called The Calm, for people who are maybe rewatching Lost for the first time and don't want to hear us talk about anything that takes place after season two, episode five. The second half of the podcast, it's called The Storm, because we used to be a podcast called Storm of Spoilers. It's a Game of Thrones Song of Ice and Fire pun. The Storm contains discussion of Lost theories and things relevant to this episode that aren't revealed until maybe the end of Lost, at the end of the sixth season, or season three or four, or yeah, maybe season five for this episode. We'll see how it goes down. If you look down your podcast notes, you will see friendly time codes for these things, so we don't want to spoil you by accident. A little more about us before we continue. You could go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers to kick us some support and become a subscriber, and you could get into our Slack. You get extra bonus podcast episodes. It's a whole bunch of extra content, and we thank you very much for helping us make this podcast possible. Also, if you are listening to this podcast the week it comes out, you still have time to see us in Boulder November 21st, at the Canyon Theater at the Boulder Public Library, we're going to be talking about Star Wars, because, yes, guys, we only have this episode and next episode of Lost to talk about before we break and spend the rest of 2019 talking about Star Wars, because it's Star Wars season. It's already starting. It's pretty great when it's not overwhelming to just have so much Star Wars washing over you. Joanna is going to hit you up with some URLs of how to contact us and where to make sure you could reserve a spot if you're coming down to Boulder, Colorado. Joanna, how's it going this week?
Oh my gosh, it's going so well. But it would go even better if we got to see you guys in Colorado. So if you want to go to soslive.com or soslives.how.com and enroll, and by enroll, I just mean like reserve your spot for the live show that we're doing in Boulder. We'd love to see you there. Also, if you're in our small council, which means you're part of our secret movie club in our Patreon subscriber level, we are doing a live watch of, what is it, Neil? Are we doing Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, we're doing Return of the Jedi, the Star Wars movie.
We're doing Return of the Jedi at a secret, undisclosed location in Colorado live that weekend. So
on,
you know,
Endor.
Yes, we will be on Endor. So the live show is the 21st, which is a Thursday, correct? And we will be watching a movie together on the 22nd. And so if you join our secret movie club, our small council, if you come to Colorado, we will tell you where that is happening so you can join us. If you can't come all the way to Colorado for that, you can watch along with us online, which is how we usually handle it. So, either way, you're going to want to go to stormpodcast.com for all your information. And if you want to like know all of our upcoming events, what's going on with us, when are we coming Star Wars? When are we coming back to Lost? What's going on? You can go to stormpodcast.com/events to find out all of that information. You can also email us, host@stormpodcast.com. You can tweet at us @stormpodcast. There's just so many ways in which you can get a hold of us. So we're going to hit one of those emails that we got from a listener here in the comms section of the podcast. But first, I got to do my due diligence and read a review. You can rate or review the podcast on Apple Podcasts is where we prefer you do it. You know, it helps people find us. But we had a friend of the pod, Luca Nieto, who is a writer for Watchers on the Wall. So he's a Game of Thrones bud of ours. He is from Spain. And he was so delighted by my hate crime against the country of Australia last week that he asked me to please read a review from him this week.
He's just trying to help you make friends with every country.
I'm gonna start with his PS, and then I'm gonna commit my hate crime against the country of Spain. He says, PS, Joanna not only has my permission, but my encouragement to try her best Spanish accent. While I and most Spaniards are white, we are not Anglo, so I get that she may not want her impression to be misconstrued as a parody of a Latino accent, but they're different enough accents and she knows how I sound anyway. My best of luck.
Wow, that is really setting you up for a huge win here.
Yeah, do my accent is very
specific. It's like, oh yeah, she's heard me talk. It's fine.
Luca has a beautiful accent and there's no way I'm gonna be able to do it. Like, I feel like the best I can hope for a Spanish accent is Manny Patinkin doing Inigo Montoya in The Princess Bride. So I think that's what you're gonna get right now. So not Luca. To be clear, this is not a Luca impression. This is me doing Manny Patinkin doing Inigo Montoya. Let us all get into that together. Goes like this, right? Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Right? All right.
I'm trying not to mess you up because that's not the accent that comes to mind. But
is it not? What is the accent?
That is the text.
Oh, come on. What is the accent sound like to you?
No, no, it's good. No. That's now the man you have to take an accent. No. That is the Manny Patinkin accent, but that wasn't what would come to my mind for Spanish. So let's go for it.
Oh God! All right.
No, it's good. Everything's good.
I'm
excited. I'm turning down my. I'm turning down. So yeah, you can't
mute,
hear me laughing.
Mute your mics, bros. Okay. I was ecstatic when I heard the news about the all-new, all-different from the podcast What? Form. Fuck. All right. I was ecstatic when I heard the news about the all-new, all-different form of the podcast. Game of Thrones may be one of my main things nowadays, but Lost was the first fandom I got into real deep, with my entire family too, which made it extra special. Reliving Lost with Joanna, Dave, and Neil has been one of my weekly highlights, not only for their unusual banter and deep lore examinations, but for making me re-examine characters and storylines that a decade ago I perhaps wasn't so fond of, or didn't appreciate fully. For me, The Storm has not only been an hour of weekly entertainment, but a way to relive my first fandom and even enhance my experience of it. So, thank you guys. All right, so that is my shitty ending.
No, perfect, perfect.
What were you thinking of?
Theories that I was not aware of. No, it was good. You fell into the gap because I was thinking more like a gentle Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, well,
Pain and Glory.
I was thinking, yes, I exactly.
But you
was
fell
like,
into it.
Well, I was like Antonio Banderas and a Pedro Almodovar, but I was like, I can't do Antonio. I'm not good enough. And like, I'm not good enough even to do fucking Inigo Montoya, to be honest with you, but we made it through. So thank you.
The whispering became the relaxness that I needed. It was great.
It got there.
Thank you, Luca, for providing us this opportunity.
Thank you, Luca, for being a sweetheart. I love you.
Like an extremely stoned Dornish prince.
Oh, I should have thought Oberyn. Fuck. Why are they always whispering? You know what I mean? Like, they always seem to be like, do you know why all the world hates a Lannister?
It's sexier that way.
I guess.
Obviously.
All right. Then we've got an email from Jane. Speaking of accents. Jane wrote us an email called Australians Angry About Beans. I'm not going to read it.
Eventually.
I'm not going to read it in Australian accent. Don't worry. Okay. She says, hey, team, in this week's episode, you pretty much asked for Australians to get angry about the beans. Now, I'm not really angry, but I do have a slight correction. I was born and raised in Kalgoorlie. I think that's how you pronounce it. The town mentioned in the episode being...
Oh, Kalgoorlie?
Well, there's an R in there, but okay.
That's how they say it in Lost.
Oh, you're right. You're right. She does a pronunciation later. Yes. Kalgoorlie. The town mentioned in the episode, and while there is an annual fair featuring rides, food trucks, fireworks, and a Highland dancing competition, which I may or may not have participated in, there's absolutely no bean counting contest. Never in my 20-ish years of attending the fair have I tried to count an inexplicable number of beans in a jar. Anyway, despite the slight mispronunciation in the episode, emphasis on the middle syllable, ignore the random R, so it's Kalgoorlie. My friends and I were both stoked back in 2005 that our very remote mining town was mentioned on the biggest US TV show on the air. Despite our utter remoteness, we felt like we were a part of something major, which was very cool. Love the pod and more high-level lore-y stuff, please. Thank you for doing what you do. Cheers, Jane. So thank you, Jane, for that bean update. We really appreciate it. We have another email from Randy that is super lore-based, and we will talk about that in the Storm section, the spoiler section of the podcast. We do not have a guest this week, but we've got a great one next week to close out this little section of Season 2 that we're doing before we roll on to Star Wars. And that is it. I am done.
That means it's time for Neil to take us in to this week on the island. In the calm, Neil... refresh us on what happened like four days after the raft launch, I believe, is how much time we've managed to progress on the island.
Yes, the old it's only been 4 days since they left. This episode, as you mentioned, and found ... is another play on the whole Lost in Translation, Lost and Found episode titling that they do with some Sun and Jin episodes. This one directed by friend of the pod, Stephen Williams. It was written by Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof, who you also may be aware of. It aired on October 19th, 2005. It takes place on day 47 on the island. On the island, Sun loses her wedding ring and spends the rest of the episode getting mostly bad advice from the other survivors. Except John Locke, his advice is not terrible and mostly works. Across the island, Ana Lucia and the Taileys prepare to take Jin, Sawyer, and Michael back to where they came from. That is, until Michael runs off looking for... Walt! Mr. Echo introduces himself, teams up with Jin, and they bring Michael back. Along the way, they spot others done three ways. Dead, alive, and carrying a dirty teddy bear. Jack tells the story of the time he lost his wedding ring, tore apart his house, and then went out and bought a new one. Classic Jack. In flashbacks, we look back at Sun and Jin's lives before they were married. She is being pushed by her father to marry a rich guy. He's trying to break through class structures and make a better life for himself. Doesn't quite work out well for either one of them, but in the end they meet and she's like, damn, right there at the end. Fun fact of the week. This is the first episode with the traditional number of flashbacks that is centric to two characters, which means that they each get equal time in their flashbacks. The other ones where it's multiple characters, they're not evenly split. It is also the first episode of season two with no Hatch stuff, you may have noticed. The Hatch goes away for a couple episodes, and don't worry, plenty of Hatch stuff on the horizon. This week's calm question, which discovery would have creeped you out more at the time, not knowing anything, of course, Goodwin's impaled body or the dirty teddy bear? Let's start this week with Dave. Which is more ominous?
If I'm the losties, the dirty teddy bear, because that's something I've not seen on this island that, you know, also a guy blew up with dynamite a couple of days ago. So, yeah.
You're saying a guy impaled on a stake is just not that big of a deal anymore.
You know, maybe he fell backwards on the stake. We don't really know what happened. But that teddy bear is just a new level of WTF because, yeah, kids.
Joanna, do you agree?
It's definitely dirty teddy bear.
I mean, there's part of me that wants to argue for Goodwin's impaled body because, like, what the hell's going on there? But, yeah, you know, the teddy bear thing, it's a, you know, obviously it's a sort of homage to the Lost Boys of Peter Pan lore and, you know, creepy kids walking around the woods with no shoes on, dragging teddy bears.
I think it's, like, even creepier that it's on a string, right? I think that's even creepier.
Yeah, and it's, like, it's just kind of hanging there looking sad. So, yeah. Yeah, there's some upsetting shit in this episode.
It's more like the racist part of the animated Disney movie where they tie up all the Lost Boys and they also tie up the teddy bear at the end. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, that's what I couldn't think of the exact.
Yeah, the what good old what makes the red man red sequence.
Yep.
Anyway, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about the movie Parasite and how apparently Koreans in class have a lot to do with smelling like fish and vegetables.
Okay.
You know, not everybody's seen Parasite
yet. Parasite.
I have not seen Parasite, so I do know that there's a lot of classism.
I got up at 6:30 in the morning to see Parasite at Fantastic Fest in Austin, and it was like me and three other people there.
I was at that festival.
I know, but not at that screening. But
I wasn't up at 6:30 in the morning. That's for damn sure. Also, if you look at a map, South Korea is ocean on three sides. So yeah, there's a lot of fishing going on in South Korea.
Ah, just poor Jin. But then Jin.
Actually,
some good Jin.
Yeah, season two Jin flashbacks, or season two Jin is much more sympathetic than season one because they had to pull the reveal that Jin was actually, you know, a nice guy and build in the relationship.
He's not a super abusive husband, as he appeared to be in the first few episodes.
And now his actions in the first few episodes make no sense. Like, honestly. The way he treats Sun in some occasions, it just still makes no sense, right? But
It's sort of hard to rectify those things.
Like
you grow to love Jin more.
When he met Sun, she's wearing this low cut dress, and then later on the island, he's like, button the top button of your cardigan in the scorching hot sun. You know, it's like, what are you talking about? Anyway, I'm curious from our listeners if they think, like, all of that hullabaloo that they do in the first season to, like, make you think ill of Jin was worth it, if we needed that. Because I think, you know, what's true now, like, I think from the moment that, like, Sun and Jin say goodbye at the end of season one while Jaquino's parting words plays, and, you know, he's like, I did this and I, because I'm not worthy and I have to rescue you and all sorts, I have to save you and all sorts of stuff like that. And you're just like, ride or die for Sun and Jin. And then Sun and Jin become like their separation. We've got the Bernard and Rose like separation, and then we've got the Sun and Jin separation. And
And this episode's trying to give us a little more Kate and Sawyer separation anxiety.
Right, and Michael and Walt, you know what I mean? So, but like the Son and Jin pull is like very strong because you're like, they just figured their shit out, really. And then they had to say goodbye. And like, you know, how can he get back to her? It's very dangerous. Like people are getting, they lost a lot of their people. we should say one of our listeners was confused. We started bandying about this phrase tailies, I think without defining what tailies mean, but tailies.
Oh yeah. We said we finally got to say it. Yeah. I don't think. Yeah.
Tailies means
they're from the tail section of the plane.
Right. So tailies is just what we mean by people who are sitting in the tail section of the plane.
Yeah.
So.
And as I mentioned last week, it's not a term that they ever use within the show, right? It's just an affectionate fan term.
It's a fan term. Yeah. So we have our losties, which is our main group of survivors, and our tailies, and then the others.
It's a little Eurocentric. It's a little front section centric. There's the losties.
Just a little bit.
And then, you know, well, the people in the back.
Well, I mean, they were the first.
Yeah. We spent a whole year getting to know them.
Sure.
And now, yeah.
We had to sit through Jin being way overwhelmingly a dick to his wife to get to the point where we now stand the whole situation. So, yeah, they get to be called losties.
So, what's interesting.
Also, go ahead. I was going to say more. The tailies have not necessarily been very endearing so far. It seems like Libby's perpetually scared. And, you know, Bernard, we like him because we like Rose, but he hasn't done anything to better the condition.
For all we know, Bernard could have done a bunch of cannibalism.
I really disagree. I mean, Bernard, super passive. But, like, both Echo and Libby keep speaking up on behalf of the Losties. And Echo especially goes beyond... You know,
that is one of the things I like about the Anna Lucia stuff in this episode is that she's very sort of commandeering and overbearing, but you can see the others standing up to her. So it really puts into question, like, what really is the dynamic here? Like, what's really going on? Because at first it looked like she was sort of running the show and Mr. Echo was the muscle, but the Mr. Echo we meet in this episode is not, no one is in charge of him. He's doing his own thing.
And we finally have his name. You know,
right.
Which is Mr. Echo. What's interesting is I didn't realize this, but I guess some people thought that the character of Mr. Echo presumed that he was Rose's husband because they're both black, right? And like at the time, viewers were like, "Oh, that's got to be Rose's husband because it's a black dude." And I mean, I think I remember. Not like
if that were the case, good for Rose.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good for Rose anyway. I love Sam Anderson, but like,
right?
But
yeah, Bernard's like, great.
But I think, yeah. At the time, I think I don't know. I mean, I think it's fair to say that like they never mention. Yeah, you know, Rose is never like I'm married to a white dude, nor should she. But like the reveal that's Bernard, I think that maybe that's not who people were expecting. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know if that sounds dicey, but I think that's true.
Well, and it's a show that has leaned into, as we talked about with Jin, they've leaned into a lot of stereotypical stuff and then sort of rolled characters back, you know? So it's not like completely crazy, but it's also weirdly racist.
It's been interesting on the rewatch, to, like right now, as somebody who knows where this is sort of going, the dialogue that creates a certain type of mystery really stands out to me. Like Echo is a good example of a character that is very satisfying, but also everything he says can potentially be taken multiple ways if you really think about it. Like he's been inserted into this television show to speak in mysterious ways, but also be, you know, this like pleasant, physical force.
He's a real he's a walking jungle of mystery moment, Mr. Echo.
Yeah.
He's always got a mystery going on.
He seems so well tempered, like almost like he's found like a Tracker Island lost piece within himself already at this episode. So I've got like all these curiosities. I guess I will roll back my not engendered any good feelings for the tailies yet. because I guess Libby does say that they've had some trust issues, which does make me think that maybe they're not all on a some sort of Anna Lucia-led prisoner hike to another camp.
I think Cindy and Bernard is extremely passive figures. Anna Lucia is domineering and aggressive. And then Libby is like somewhat passive, but also I love that we have like someone who knows psychiatry, on the show. And then, and then Echo is like, does not at all have to go with Jin into the jungle after Michael at all. And he does. And, he's like, I'm going to help him get his friend. That's, it's a great moment.
He's got a real sense of adventure, that guy.
He also has like fashioned many a weapon for them, which is out of the various airplane shrapnel and stuff like that. So it's pretty great.
So I guess while we're off with Mr. Echo and Jin searching for Michael, and we talked about teddy bears, but there's also this idea. I guess we get more of a geography in this episode that they're on what they consider like one half of the island and suspect that the camp is on the other half of the island, and somewhere in the middle where all the fruit is where the others have been dispersing out of. So we're building some boundaries and on our map of the Lost Island. But then they could also move through the jungle in like single file with bare feet and not leave any tracks.
Make like no sound.
Yeah, and make like no sound, except whispering apparently when they want to. Very confused about the mystery parts of this show, but while we're not in the hatch, which has like a very cut and dry sort of symbolic button. But I really like this episode as an opportunity for our Beach Lost family to continue being normal. We have a pretty traditional everyone checks in with one character episode, except this time it's with Sun.
Well, what do you mean, as opposed to what other time?
Usually Jack checks in with everybody for, like, no reason, because Jack's the central character in whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're right. Like, I noticed that, too, right? It's like, okay, this person has a conversation with Sun. This person has a conversation with Sun. But, like, and it's our A-team, right? It's it's Hurley, it's Jack, it's Kate, and it's Locke. But I'm actually a little annoyed by that because we mentioned last week, I really liked this whole, like, Sun, Shannon, Claire thing that was happening. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, we have to have our alpha cast members check in with Sun. And I just feel like there are other characters, like Shannon, who lost Boone, could have talked to Sun about like losing someone and how that feels. Rose, who doesn't like believes that her husband is coming back, but is unsure and wears her and his wedding ring on a chain, and maybe could teach Sun how to do that for herself. I just don't feel like these people with the except like, I think Kate is a really miss here. Like the Sawyer thing feels like a real miss, even though I like Sawyer and Kate. It feels like a real miss for me. Though she has like a connection, like a reason to like be digging through the bottle and stuff like that. The Locke works really well for me. And I guess the Jack works for me in that like we get, Sun gets more information about Jack in terms of like, okay, but you don't have a wedding ring now. So, but Hurley, I guess Hurley's just comedy, but I don't know. Vincent's there. Shouldn't Shannon be there? I don't know. I was like, they get so much time, this A team. Like, couldn't we have had some of the B players, in the mix a bit more here? That's how I feel.
I agree. And I would have struck Locke. I mean, he does have like a good little Locke scene, but, he should be pushing the button. Like, it doesn't make the most sense for Locke to just be leisurely wandering around giving out
sitting in a garden
advice to people. Yeah. Right. Oh, hey, I was just watching you fuck up your garden. Not creepy at all.
It wasn't creepy. What are you talking about?
He's always when is Locke not a little creepy?
He was just he was so nice to her. He was incredibly nice to her.
Yes, but he is also by the nature of how television work, like popping up right as people are having like horrible moments. And we've talked about this as being like somewhat antagonistic, but even So, like, I would say creepy. If you are in your private garden.
Your private garden? It's
okay,
it's
the garden that you tend to?
It's like, it's all public. Like, they're all walking through each other's backyards all the time. That they all live together on a
beach. It's a real communal space. They're like, just, they trade things to and from each other. It's like a society on the
beach.
Like
a society, man. Private garden.
I don't know. I think the garden's a little over off somewhere. Yeah, it's where
no,
she
I
has,
think
makes
it's,
her like.
Here's the thing. I don't think that it's weird that Locke stumbles upon her garden or her emotional outburst that she's having. I think that it's more of a, like, what's weird about it is he's very open with how super chill he is about being on the island now. Like, we've crossed a Rubicon with Locke. Where now that the hatch is like open and he's in there, he's now cool with everybody knowing that he wants to be here, which I think is like, that to me is the weird thing. Is like, Sun doesn't react to it because she's got her own shit going on. But that I think is an interesting moment for Locke, you know, for him to be like, I love it here. I'm at peace here.
Stop looking is the way you find things.
Stop trying to get off this island. We're doing great.
You're never going to get your Spider-Man comics back, Dave. I am again.
Son, if you don't find your ring, do you want to be on my team? The John Locke team?
He doesn't say that. He's not
trained. He's working to it.
No, you're not. You're letting Dave poison your mind. He's just doing nice things all the time for people.
Really nice.
He gives her a handkerchief, a nice clean handkerchief. He's just like very sweet and thoughtful. I was watching it. I was like, no way the boys can fuck this one up. This is just Locke being nice. And then here you come, Neil and Dave, being like, what a creep. I'm like, what are you talking about?
I do, but are you noticing at least what I'm noticing about Locke, where he's now crossed into this realm of like the Svengali of I love being on the island? Like, now he's openly that guy. He wasn't like that before, until he had that argument with Jack.
But isn't it better to be yourself?
I mean, maybe.
Isn't it better to just, like, be open and not, like, secretive and weird and, like, drag Boone off into the jungle and goop him? That was bad luck.
Still feels like it sort of remains to be seen.
This is like, don't worry, my handkerchief is clean because I know where the washer and dryer is now.
Yeah, this is like guidance counselor Locke. Like, he shows up, gives you some good advice, and then disappears back into the mysterious hatch that only like five people are allowed to go into.
Once Claire is still sleeping on that fucking beach.
Yep, Claire's still out on the beach. Hurley's following the dog around to see if it ate the ring. It's just a real mess this week.
Yeah, someone should tell Hurley they find the ring at the end of the episode.
Oh, otherwise, so he doesn't go full Laura Dern.
Yeah, exactly. So he's in picking through poop somewhere, trying to be a good.
If this was a comedy show with a post-credit scene, like a Rick and Morty type of thing, the post-credit scene would be Hurley sitting on the ground, like picking through poop.
They could still add that as like right after the lost title.
Yeah.
Like, really nice shot of a beach sunset, and everyone's, like, feeling maybe there's hope, but then poop.
I will also say that the ending of this episode is more upbeat than we've been getting. You know, we've gone through this run of Lost episodes where they've been leaving a lot of cliffhangers, they've been asking a lot of big questions right at the end, or they've been resolving multi-episode long things right at the end of the episode with big shocker moments. This one's just sort of sweet, you know? I mean, I think we obviously know that Jin and Sun end up together, so that's a pretty easy one, but I think that this one sort of ends on a fun, nice, happy note. And that's not always the case.
Yeah, I think it's the show it takes, like, Everybody Hates Hugo to transition out of hatch drama, because at the beginning we just have so much hatch drama to clear up. It was a mystery at the end of season one. Gotta clear it all up, refresh those mysteries. But then, yeah, now we've had some time to transition back into characters and using Hurley as a way to, you know, transition back to the Losties, and then having him distribute all the food is great. But then Sun and Jin is also a great, you know, character to start juicing the fact that some of these characters are connected or separated and they're all starting to stream back together, or they're trying to all stream back together if they don't get picked off by others with creepy teddy bears.
They end
in the jungle.
They end on the flashback, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually something I double-checked before I finished the notes this week, because I was like, that doesn't seem right, but it is.
Yeah, and that's rarely the case, but I really like, I like the way that they did that in this episode. We should talk a little bit about Sun and her dating experience. First of all, they missed a real opportunity here. When Sun said she went to university to, like, get an education, we find out she studied art history. That's great. You know, art history seems like, you know, she's a rich girl, like, she studied art history. Okay. But, like, they could have been, like, she could have been, like, botanical science, and I would have been like, yes! Yeah. Thank you!
Now the minor in English?
With
the minor in secret English?
They're the minor in secret. Or minor in, secret minors.
Minor in, like, nursing? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's just... They really had an opportunity there. Oh, right,
because of all the
various
roles that they plug Sun into on the island. Right.
It was mostly a season one thing, I think. But yeah, the nursing and the botanical knowledge, the herbology, the mystical Asian herbology knowledge that she had. And then we meet Jay Lee, played by an actor called Tony Lee, who I think, I'm just going to put this out there, I think is one of the handsomest men that ever shows up on Lost. This guy is real treat.
I mean, that's true. However, I would argue that they do a really good job, especially at the end of this episode, making Daniel Dae Kim look hot.
Well, yeah, but like, yes, we've spent... many episodes praising Daniel Dae Kim's cheekbones and occasionally his ab muscles.
But they
just wanted to, like, this guy,
you know,
they
use the flashback to clean him up, and, you know, he's got longer hair. Oh, woo.
So it's a good look. It's the men of Korea are really, really showing up here.
It's like Hawaii 5. Whoa.
Do we want to, Neil was like, please don't make me decide whether or not this actor is actually Korean, but in lieu of our Australian accent,
I also,
corner,
before you get to this, I want to correct something I said last week, which was that I said that Daniel Dae Kim was an American actor. He was raised in America, but he was actually born in Korea. He was born in Seoul. So I just for clarity's sake.
So. Australian accent corner to be replaced by how well does this person speak Korean corner, as if we dummies know.
We are the authorities on this.
So Tony Lee, the actor who plays Jay Lee, do we think that he you know, what do you think about him? This is awful. Should we strike this segment?
I mean
it's really hard to say.
I'll come out and say not good, because if we're just taking shots in the dark, why not flip a coin? No, maybe it's not good. I'm going to say it's not good.
I will say this. Let's see. How do I want to say?
Nope.
I do think that there is, like, you can tell a fairly clear difference between some of the older actors who are speaking Korean on the show and some of the younger actors, because I think a lot of the younger actors are not Korean, like, you know, Korean is their first language. So I think that that's the only difference I've ever been able to spot. Otherwise, I have absolutely no idea.
So here's all the information I have on Tony Lee, the actor who plays Jay Lee. He went to high school in Los Angeles. He went to UC Berkeley. He has been admitted to the State Bar of California. So he is an eligible bachelor in real life, ladies.
All right. My coin flips looking really good.
Ran away to America and married the law.
But according to the his stub on sort of Lostopedia, he, like, it says origin Seoul, Korea. So I think maybe it's like Daniel Dae Kim, where perhaps he was born in Korea but raised in the U.S. I don't know. Mm-hmm. The answer there is, I don't know.
Daniel Dae Kim was the one who took a lot more flack for his Korean accent. Than, say, Yunjin Kim, who played Sun.
So, if you have opinions about Tony Lee's
if you're
Korean,
a person who is far more qualified to answer this question than any of the three of us.
But I do...
The bar very low.
I do like this whole exchange where, like... I mean, he's not a dick necessarily, you know what I mean? But like, he misreads the situation, and
he thinks he's found a fellow traveler out of like patriarchy town,
yeah,
or at least out of like traditional Korean values town,
right?
Where he's like, I want to move to America and marry an American.
Right, but he forgot how handsome he is. Right.
and she's like, you were kind of cute, and you seem to be kind of
cool. This was real for me. I read a whole Russian book between our first date and our second date.
Yes, his Russian literature major was pretty. He was a Harvard man, too. Anyway, mm-hmm. Nice to meet you, Jin.
Whereas Jin studied fishing and disavowing his own father.
But he does look
moving
that family.
Up from busboy to waiter.
You know, when there are times later in the series, or earlier in the series, where we will see Jin harden himself and sort of betray his core morals for the greater good of his marriage or whatever. So it's nice to meet him here, where he's like taking a lot of abuse, but when push comes to shove, he does the right thing. He quits his job. He's like, fuck you. And then he meets Sun, and they have a really adorable meet.
Well, and I think too, it does help us understand more of why they were together in the first place, because up to this point, we've gotten a lot of why they shouldn't be together at the time they board the plane.
Yeah, like trapped by her father.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of reasons that we get why this thing is not working. But I do think it's really interesting to see, like, the idealistic Jin, the Jin who stands up for himself and, is a total smoke show.
And, like, fun and really funny.
Yeah.
Like, him talking to his roommate in the beginning is, like, really fun. You know, he's like, I'm not paying for this tie. Are you kidding me? Like, all this sort of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. So it's part of the rehabilitation of Jin. Because I think Jin Stark, and, you know, this might be a thing where, like I said, sometimes they lean into a couple of things a little harder than they may have needed to in the long run. And Jin does feel like one of those things where early on they leaned a little too hard into him being controlling over Sun, because the way they roll that back eventually, even to this point, is pretty drastic.
Yeah, this season's Charlie's season to be an asshole for no reason.
But yeah, no, like Jin, being insistent about Michael to the point where he like punched Mr. Echo in the face in order to try to go after Michael, which I wouldn't do. Not for you guys. Guess what? I love you both. But if you run off into a jungle of mystery, where there are people potentially, I don't know, eating people. I don't know what the others do. And there is a large imposing man like Mr. Echo between us. I'll be like, well, it was nice knowing you guys. You did that.
I feel
too.
Like in that
you
scenario,
played yourself.
Joanna is the Sawyer.
Yeah.
Dave's probably the Michael. And then I guess I'm the Jin.
Walt!
Because Dave's the one who would be like, hold on, I have a theory. I'll be back. And he would run off into the jungle.
No, I don't
you
think.
Just find me yelling at a waterfall.
I don't think I'm. I mean, yes, if the three of us have to be like three of the like fronties from the plane, I'm doing away with this Lossies thing. I think it's prejudice against the Tailies. So if we're three
fronties, though, doesn't sound right.
They're the survivors.
If we have to be three of the fronties, I see that breakdown. But in actuality, I'm Libby. Where I'm like, oh, well, oh, I feel bad.
Excuse me. His name is Michael.
Yeah.
Use his name.
Yeah, right?
Okay.
I'm Libby. I'm very Libby. I'll like stand up to Ana Lucia, but I'm not going to get punched in the face by Mr. Echo. I have my limits.
That's fair.
So, yeah, that's who I am, I think, in that situation.
Take me, you damn waterfall!
Give me back my son.
Yeah, that's very Dave. That's true. Neil, I don't know if you're Jin. I don't know.
No, I don't
really
know. I'm a real Bernard in this situation.
I think you are a Bernard.
Send me back to Rose. I just want to sit on the beach
Rose. We're Bernard and Libby, which is like, you kind of like them, but they're also kind of useless. That's you and me, bud. Dave
well, you're not,
a
you're
card.
Not 100% sure why they're still alive if there right? are like 20 people who have died. It's like, wait, how did these guys end up alive?
How did they outlast literally anyone? but you know, our charm. Our affectionate hearts.
Sure.
You know, All right. What else are we not talking about that we should talk about? Kind of it. This is a pretty straight, like, you don't have a C plot. You've got a sun plot and a Jin plot, really. I mean, I guess there's like,
you're a sun plot, a Jin plot, and then Michael wanders off and it comes to nothing.
But that's a Jin. That's a Jin plot. He's the lost item that Jin wants to find. Sun loses a wedding ring. Jin loses a Michael.
And there's a flashback of some stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and Sawyer, we're trying to slowly pry information out of the tail section survivors, but, you know, and we saw Goodwin, and that's...
Yeah, there was a dead guy named Goodwin.
There was a dead guy named Goodwin. Well, he was mentioned before. Yeah, remember right. What happened to Goodwin sort of thing. So.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the flashback and the on-island story around Jin is just that it's, you know, Jin is loyal. He will stand up to the he will stand up for the underdog in a situation, I think, is sort of the thing, because I don't think Jin is really activated to go get Michael until he sees that everybody's going to leave. Like that's when Jin's like, yeah, no, we do need to go get him. Like, we can't just leave him. Which is similar to me in, you know, sticking up for himself with the manager in the flashback.
Well, I do also appreciate the way in which they've, like, we know that Jin has learned certain amount of English, because Sun made him some flashcards, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is some, like, communication that's able to happen for Jin, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's also just like parts of the episode where he'll just like be speaking Korean and we don't get subtitles. We don't know what he's saying, but then he'll just like pause and he'll be like, Walt. You're like, Walt. I get it.
Yes. He thinks Walt. He needs to find Walt.
I get it. He knows why Michael left. It's Walt.
I love the stuff where it's just him and Echo, just the character work of it, because you can see Echo, you know, I think we have, obviously, Echo, the first time we saw him was just as a shadow charging at us with a giant club. So I think there's a pull to think of him as like a dangerous entity now. And this episode sort of blows that up immediately and is like, well, there's a lot more to this guy than you might think. There's Lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I love the little communication things where he's, you know, they're talking about Sun and, a lot of it's nonverbal and it's really delightful.
Echo's the one person from the Tailies that I can't picture being on the plane right now. Like, who was this guy before he was this? This seems pretty, like, fully formed.
That's a pretty great thing about Mr. Echo. He's full of surprises.
Full of surprises. One great big question.
He's a walk-in jungle of mystery.
Oh, speaking of that, Neil, yes. Is it time for our jungle of mystery moment?
Well, yes, if we're going to be in this jungle, if we're going to be tied to a tree in a jungle of mystery, might as well celebrate the moment where a pair of legs walks by holding a teddy bear on a fucking string, and it's terrifying. People, I do remember, you know, there are flashes of things that come to me, and obviously this was one thing that drove people nuts back in the day, which was, you know, they've... you know, this is the first time we're seeing real others, I guess.
People who took Walt?
And the people who took Walt. Yeah, I guess.
But
the kid thing is creepy.
It really is.
It's just extra creepy.
The people who took Walt, it was hard to see, like... like they were like bearded and looked like had like a jacket or something, but this was like barefooted, muddy, tattered clothes, bear on a string.
Oh, you know what else is kind of creepy about it is the sort of familiarity that the Tailies seem to have with it. You know, like the sort of, you know, Echo like stops Jin, and it's not like this specific thing has happened to them before, but we're already starting to get the sense that they've maybe had some interactions with
many
trust issue interactions.
I mean, so I think that there is.
Wait, can we show, bleep that?
What? Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, I guess. Yeah. Okay.
So
yeah,
it's where we have our other's threat has been intensified, which I should say intensified with again a reminder. It has been 4 days since Black Smoke Incident in Island Time. So really, the show's doing a good job, I think, balancing our threats, or like I was saying, transitioning out of Hatch and being like, also, there are these other people. We've got some more settings for our upcoming episodes of Jungle of Mystery, with that creepy teddy bear on a string. This week's falling down. I can only find one person falling down. I've taken this on myself to say it because I've fallen down this year. So now I'm part of the fallen shame group. I'm very sensitive to seeing media portrayals of people falling down. Jin gets headbutted by Mr. Echo. What Joanna would not do.
I definitely wouldn't. Not even for you.
Not fall down for us.
I mean, that's fair. It looked like it hurt.
It really did. Jacquino Corner this week is a new theme for Sun and Jin, which will stick around. It's called The Last to Know. And I don't know why please email us if you, maybe because Jin was the last to know, but he wasn't the last to know that Sun speaks English. So I don't know why it's called The Last to Know.
I bet he felt like the last to know that Sun speaks English.
I don't know. It's really interesting. It was born for this episode. So is it because Sun and Jin are the last to know in this episode what we already know, which is that they're MFEO? I don't know. But email us stormpodcast@gmail.com if you have some thoughts on why this Jacquino theme is called The Last to Know for Sun and Jin.
Otherwise, it'll forever be a mystery. If we can't get answers from our listeners.
And Dave, you want to hit us with that
Leslie Arst Memorial Ironic Statement. It'd be, he ain't coming back without Walt. Sawyer to Jin. I think 11 minutes of screen time before he comes back without Walt.
It's one of those real quick ones. Quick mysteries.
Wow. Yeah. The Sawyer, I guess, Anna Lucia bit is, we didn't talk about because that sort of burgeoning flirtation's happening. But yeah, it seems like, I think actually maybe Neil said it was. Anna Lucia seems like it's her Sawyer.
Yeah, I gotta mention that. I guess the tail section is sort of like, what would happen if Sawyer were in charge?
Right, what would happen if, there's no doctor?
Jack. Yeah, there's no Jack. Sawyer's in charge.
Or if the doctor was not properly qualified to do wounds, but only head stuff, like Libby.
Yeah.
Just head
what
stuff.
What if the leader of your group just constantly asks people their sexual orientation all the time?
That's what I forgot. Yeah, that's something I wanted to say before we zoomed to the storm. Anna Lucia doesn't seem homophobic when she asks if he's gay, because she doesn't go what are you gay? You know, she's like, you gay? Seems kind of matter of fact. Sawyer being like, haha, very funny.
That's a real 2004.
That's a real 2005. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a real Sawyer thing. I do like that they keep calling him the redneck. It's pretty great. So, you know.
he's earned the title by giving people other horrible nicknames.
Absolutely has. Absolutely.
Excellent. So we are going to jump into the storm right after this.
All right, and we've reached that time of the show where we thank the members of our small council, patreon.com/stormofspoilers, where you can get on this list, including these first four folks who are brand new to the small council this week. I'm saying thank you to all of you, including Kate Whitney, Miranda Mooney, Christopher Bates, Cassandra Zabo, and then some existing members, Corinne, Miranda Lane, Claire C., Abby Bateman, Victoria Yoder, Carolyn, I'm going to assume that that's a typo, Rajiv Dasani, Lori Bonar, Pekka Koskimaki, yeah, I'm going to need you to correct me on that one. Shannon Black, Sean Ambrose, Dan Allen, Susan Flanagan, Jax Frankovich, Jennifer Boucher, Christina Brosius, and Rachel Fisher Bramble. Thank you all very much.
And I would like to thank some people whose names I will probably get wrong, but I'm going to give it an earnest try because our great small council members, Monty Cross, Susan Kustuch, Danielle Shepherd, Spencer Howard, Susan P., Nick Mendoza, Elizabeth Stelner, Ainsley Clark, Samantha Gonzalez, Jess, Shayna, Drake, Keller, Evandel, Rebecca. Ooh, this one's Gaelic. Is it Siobhan?
Siobhan.
Is how you do it?
Siobhan. Yeah.
Anyone who watches Succession knows that.
Siobhan Braid? Brade? Siobhan Braid. Nicole Capus. Tony Livingston.
Fahim Ibrahim.
Lauren Galbraith. Ali Karaka. And Ryan Casas. Thank you very much.
I'm going to thank some people as well. And just a reminder that if you're in our small council, that means both you can sign up for the holiday exchange, gift exchange that our small council is doing over in our Patreon, Slack. I think you still have time to do that. But anyway, that's something they're doing. It's super fun. So go, head on over, be a part of that, get some fun gifts from fellow listeners. Also, you can join us in Colorado to watch a Star Wars. So anyway, that includes Suniva, Agard, Phoebo Trollio, Jessica, Parton, Christopher, Mac, Paul, Jennifer, Cannavale, Morgan McGrew, Alejandra, Pozos, Sean O'Connor, Sarah Finnamore, Melanie Shu, Nikki Hyde, Damon Van Vuren, Michelle, Nathan Miller, Josh, Benjamin Birdie, Kat Reeves, Cheryl Nilsson, and Mary Henderson. Thank you all so, 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 so much.
And we are back for the storm. I guess we kind of did a mild lock antagonist check-in in the calm. I'm not sure there's anything more stormy to add. So I'm going to throw this next note here, which is, hey, we met Jay Lee.
Jay Lee, who knew? Well, come, I mean, like, I think we had an advantage.
Keep an eye out for this guy.
Knowing that this guy is super, very American because... We hear him speak completely unaccented, as opposed to like Sun's English and Jin's English. Jay Lee's English is completely unaccented in future episodes. So that's just a fact that's true of that character. We'll see him two more times, right? And you know, yep. he was a candidate for Sun's baby daddy. So, you know, it's all storm stuff. I wanted to circle back to what I was saying about like other people who could have talked to Sun, because we've been talking about the fact that like, okay, Shannon dies next week.
Next episode.
So like, what a missed golden opportunity to use her in this week, like having a real moment with Sun, talking about Boone, like really feeling like maybe Shannon is like on the road to healing or something about
talking,
you know,
about how she's really just feeling good about where this whole Saeed thing is going.
Their future together, tall, soggy Walt, whatever it is. Like that scene with Hurley, and it could just been like, I mean, Hurley poop stories are fun and all, but like really just put Shannon on that log with Vincent and Jin and do that instead. That's what I would say. Hindsight is 20/20, but that's what I would have done. So, do you guys have any thoughts about that? About,
you're very right, and it seems especially egregious, except that I think they're just really going for the surprise factor of next week, and it is surprising.
They really do ghost Shannon for like two episodes, and then all of a sudden it's just...
It's going to feel worse for people who are listening to us on the podcast, because Shannon's going to die and then we're going to spend some time talking about Star Wars, and we're going to come back, and it's not that we're going to not remember Shannon, but it's really going to put the tampers on.
Well,
Shannon's untimely death.
Her body is in episode 7. So.
Yeah. she gets the Boone Plus treatment.
Oh, so we get to like mourn her all through Star Wars seasons, which
we're
saying.
Sure.
Like, we know she's dead by the end of episode 6. I just rewatched it. We know she's dead, but like Saeed carries her body back to camp, like in episode 7, right? When like Ana Lucia lets him go or whatever. We'll talk about that later. okay. The Sun and Jin separation. I think it's really poignant and well used here. And then just like, this is one of the things that on my recent rewatch all the way through the series, I got really angry at the way in which the show abuses the Sun and Jin separation.
Almost like Charlie's drug problem.
It's not, I don't know. It's like, cause they get rid of all their other pairs, right? Well, like Bernard and Rose get reunited and they're never separated again, except for like one time when Bernard plays hero, right?
Mm-hmm.
Michael and Walt sail off together. That's a different thing. Boone and Shannon are RIP, right? But like, so separating Sun and Jin and like having Sun trying to get back to Jin be like I think it's a multi-season situation, right? The freighter blows up at the end of season 4.
Oh yeah. See guys, I told you at the top of the episode, we'd talk about season 5 here in the storm.
The freighter blows up at the end of season 4, right? And you think
no one believes that Jin is dead.
Like Diana, I'm rewatching with Diana. She 1,000% thought Jin was dead.
Oh my God.
Believed it for like, until he showed back up. She's like, what's that in the water? Oh my God. It's Jin. It was great.
Oh my God. We're going to have a talk about this.
I know. You praise me in my poker face. I was like, yep, Jin's dead. What a bummer.
I remember not being sold on that at the time it aired. Being like, why'd they cut back to him right there?
Well, there's that like really like,
or no, and then they don't. You never see him blow up. Like you see the ship.
Yeah, that's the thing. You don't get.
They cut to him, and then they cut away, and then they cut back to the ship blowing up with no him.
Yeah. Yes. Correct. Yeah. Correct. I think if you're highly trained to look for that sort of things, you will have noticed.
You got a good eye.
But you know, like Diana doesn't do this for a living, so it's okay. Yeah. But yeah, and there's that really cheap episode when you're still trying to figure out who the Oceanic Six is. And it's the When Sun Gives Birth episode. And Jin's part is actually like a pre-island flashback where he's like trying to get to the hospital. It's a crazy episode. It's a really, 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 really sad episode. And you find out that like Sun thinks Jin is dead and it's this whole thing. Anyway, and then yeah. And then they fly back to the island and everyone goes back to see Jin except fucking Sun is stuck in with like Ben and Locke because they still can't reunite Sun and Jin yet. It's just like they really, really abuse that later on.
It really becomes their one move with Sun and Jin.
Yeah, it's.
I did feel that watching this episode when Jin goes into the jungle with Mr. Echo. I'm like, this feels like the mode that Jin's in for the rest of the series. Like on some weird side quest stumbling through like the jungle or a freighter or something. But they really do, yeah, side quest Jin a lot to keep them separated.
I mean, I do like 70s Jin. 70s Jin speaks English pretty well and has like great long hair. It's like Dharma Initiative Jin's pretty great, but like he's been separated from his wife for 3 years and that sucks. And like, and I got really sad when I saw Jin being really nice to that like little boy who needs to go to the bathroom. I was like, Jin never gets to meet his daughter ever. Ever. So, you know, it's a storm.
It's a pretty dark show.
All right. we wanted to correct the, we were talking last week about whether or not Juliet's bones.
Okay. We should correct. Whether we want to do something or not is irrelevant to corrections, I suppose, because I still think that my headcanon.
Dave's like, in my mind, I'm still right.
I can't believe you just like well actuated me on like a fact. Juliet's bones are not in the hatch.
Welcome to the age of Trump. I can do whatever I want.
It's the worst. That's the worst thing you've ever done.
This is the darkest timeline.
Definitely not fighting Mr. Echo to go find you.
What do you think my goatee has been here telling you this entire time?
Awful. Anyway, Juliet's bones are not in the hatch. Calm down. She's not in there. It's fine.
She gets ported forward.
Wah, wah. This is how Dave reacts when he's empirically wrong. Okay. but we do want to talk about timey-wimey stuff. And that brings us to an email that we got from Randy, who's a very great, knowledgeable member of our Patreon Slack community. Randy wrote us an email called It's Unstuck in Time Time.
Yes!
On the most recent... See, like, just take your medicine when we have to correct you, because you know I will give you something. You just say, I was wrong about Juliet. And then...
I feel as a host of this podcast, I have a right to complain when I want to.
All right. So Randy writes, on the most recent podcast, we finally found ourselves talking about eternalism as it relates to Desmond's abilities. : Was he born with his abilities, or did he acquire them over time, or do they exist within a block universe where the past, present, and future are predetermined? This philosophy is possibly the most essential pivot point for the entire series. No, not because we need indisputable answers to time travel, but because it grounds the show in the questions of fate versus free will. If the conflict between the man of science and the man of faith is the core of the show, then the discussion of fate versus free will is an echo of that central core. It becomes more than Jack versus Locke. It becomes, and here we're going to get some quotations from the show. You don't do it because you choose to, Desmond. You do it because you're supposed to. That's Eloise Hawking, and I chose not to do her accent. You're welcome. Versus, so that Eloise quote, you don't do it because you choose to, Desmond. You do it because you're supposed to. Versus Benjamin, whatever he's told you, I want you to remember one thing. You have a choice, and that's Jacob. Still, even beyond these pivotal moments, the show is grounded in the question of the choices our survivors will make. Will they come together and become better people or not? Lost rejects eternalism and finds countless avenues for our survivors to wield and assert their free will. I believe that Kurt Vonnegut made a similar argument in Slaughterhouse-Five, the source of the phrase unstuck in time that is featured so prominently on Lost in The Constant. According to Vonnegut, his protagonist, Billy Pilgrim, has come unstuck in time. He is spastic in time, has no control over where he is going next. The trips aren't necessarily fun. He is in a constant state of stage fright, he says, because he never knows what part of his life he's going to have to act in next. This line seems to inform much of Desmond's time travel experience on Lost as well. Billy learns his facts about time travel after being abducted by a race of aliens, Tralfamadorians. Nailed it.
Tralf, good job. No, you did. I was saying it along.
That's not what you were doing. Okay. By a race of aliens whose attitude about time is reminiscent of Eloise Hawking. All time is time. It does not change. These aliens who also find the human concept of free will to be utterly absurd. I visited 31 inhabited planets in the universe, and I've studied reports on 100 more. Only on Earth is there any talk of free will. That was a quote. Now in the book, Billy believes the Tralfamadorians. How do you say it, Dave?
No, it's good. Keep going.
Okay. Billy believes them and takes comfort in the notion that everything is beyond his control, but we can't mistake that for Vonnegut's endorsement of eternalism. Billy is broken and unmotivated, his life is an act, and he has failed to make healthy connections with anyone, even members of his own family. Furthermore, Vonnegut works hard to make us question the know-it-all Tralfamadorians. Despite their claims of superiority, the Earth habitat on the alien zoo they stick Billy in is nothing more than a crude parody of suburban life built with furniture ransacked from a Sears Roebuck department store. Sound like any gated communities on the island that are in the business of lying to people? Question mark. He's talking about Dharmaville. When Billy asks his captors if they have a peaceful planet, they respond by saying, "Today we do. On other days, we have wars as horrible as anything you've ever seen or read about. There isn't anything we can do about them, so we simply don't look at them. We spend eternity looking at pleasant moments." This strikes me as an excuse. And perhaps a condemnation of the sheltered lives people have built for themselves and our tendency to look the other way even though we see terrible things happening. If Vonnegut didn't think this attitude was total bullshit, the first chapter of the novel certainly wouldn't include the fact that he has asked his sons to make very careful moral choices. If you still don't believe me, please note that those Tralfamadorians I was talking about are shaped like plungers, and we all know what plungers are in the business of pushing. Thanks for listening, and please know that Vonnegut and I endorse any grand unified theories of Lost that champion free will and power of human connection. Thank you for that email, Randy, for reminding me of the one of my, like, I don't know if you guys read Vonnegut in or read Slaughterhouse-Five in school or for pleasure or at all or whatever, but I definitely read Slaughterhouse-Five in high school, and I have like two strong memories associated with it. One is the phrase mustard gas and roses, and the other is the idea of the serenity prayer, right? Which is, you know, God grant me the what is it, to accept what I cannot change.
Yeah, something strength to accept what I cannot.
Yeah, blah 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 blah. Obviously, I'm a bad, not a Christian at all.
I'm a bad Vonnegut reader.
I'm a bad Al-Anon attender, but that idea of this idea constantly questioning free will. What the other thing, and I don't remember if we talked about this last week, we were talking about time travel, but the section of the Lost rewatch that I'm in, Daniel Faraday just keeps saying, whatever happened, happened, whatever happened, happened, whatever happened, happened. That's Lost's way around the ramifications of time travel, right? There is no butterfly effect in Lost because whatever you did, you already did. And it brought you to where you are. So I don't know. I don't know if I agree with Randy. I agree with his interpretation of Slaughterhouse 5. I don't know if I agree with his interpretation of Lost. Neil or Dave, do you want to weigh in on these questions?
I like the interpretation of it for Lost, and I think that anytime we run against like incongruity of it, it's not only to create like the sort of free will versus fate dialogue, but it's also like the truth that to make a show that has locked in faith as to the degree that Faraday says it is actually much more difficult to structure from a storytelling standpoint, which is sort of why they kind of contain it to that season before we're off to some more mystical things that don't have such specific rules. But like, if everything has happened and your characters don't have choices, and that's the thought of your series, it's going to you, the momentum that you get in your storytelling comes from things that you reveal to the audience, not from things that characters do to interact with one each other or to do it, or things that characters find out, because within that same story world and the attitude of the show, it's already happened. So I think sometimes Lost, to its benefit, becomes it's about the characters, stupid. And in order for that to be properly dramatic, there needs to actually be choice, because it's no fun watching somebody. It's no fun even in a rewatch, I think, to watch conflicts that feel forced. So imagine that the show told you that everything happens one way and then still had to pretend to have Kate and Sawyer in a fucking bear cage for a couple of episodes and say like that was purposeful and had to happen. I like the idea of a theory, but I think the messiness of television means that we can't, like my Locke antagonist theory, prove it completely wrong or right as we go forth. But I like keeping that in mind as much as I like keeping the idea that the smoke monster thinks it's human because it's light that got exposed to human pain. So let's add it to I'm going to add it to my Storm rewatch free will versus fate stands in.
Like a recurring segment. I kind of like that. Neil, do you have any thoughts about it?
No.
Okay. That's fine. And here's the follow-up question. Is there anyone who acts in a way that feels like I defy you, stars? Like, that contradicts their fate and acts outside of it? Because I don't think so. I think it's Jack's fate. I think it's Desmond's fate to do what he does to save the island. I think it's Jack's fate to do that. I think everyone acts.
Saeed
throwing himself on the bomb.
And the whole like dark infected thing. You think that was all? I mean, that feels, there are certain ones on like the periphery characters that feel like they could go either way.
I just think
Goodwin's a candidate,
right? Well, Goodwin's a really weird one, because like Goodwin, who does really kind of nasty shit in another 48 hours, which we'll see. When we meet him as part of Juliet's story, seems like a real, like, kind of
real different
guy. Nice dude.
Yeah. Trapped in like a loveless marriage.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Like a nice dude. Like, he wouldn't be so deeply manipulative. This is what I'm saying, and I talked about this before with like Ethan and stuff like that, where I just feel like their early perception of the others and then who they try to like paint the others to be later is slightly incongruous, which is okay. I see anyone breaking out. People defy Eloise. Like, Desmond defies Eloise in the final season. She's trying to stop Desmond from, like, waking people up. mostly because she's trying to like keep Daniel in his dreams. I don't know. It's we'll talk about that years from now. But
yeah, that's why I'm not ready, because I'm like, oh god, that's there's so much season, like four or five.
But so Desmond defies Eloise, but like once again, that seems to be like they were meant to all find each other in the afterlife. So I don't know. I think in order to avoid making a real mess for themselves in time travel, and Dave and I have talked about this a lot. I don't know that I've had a lot of discussions with you about this, Neil, but like, if you're going to do a time travel plot, you need to, we talked about this with Avengers Endgame. If you're going to do a time travel plot, you need to come up with like some yada, yada, yada narrative thing that like makes you able to have a fun romp through time without seriously fucking like the present day that you've already seen, right?
We'll just put the Infinity Stones back.
Right. And so it's like, so Daniel Faraday just consistently saying whatever happened happened is like, it's cool. Locke can like go, you know, Locke can show up and tell Richard Alpert that he's special, and that's why Richard Alpert started visiting Locke when Locke was born. You know, like these little loops that they create for themselves. I don't know, it's interesting. But we can definitely put fate.
But yeah, yeah, it's the cool thing about those plots is the revelation of those loops. It's not, because when you're getting like time flash to the island, the actual what's happening is confusion.
But then that,
like, what's happening?
That feels like fate then. I mean, they all make
That is fate, but that's what I'm saying, is that once you live in a world where everything that happened happened, the dramatic irony is transferred from the characters to the plot.
Sure.
It's harder to latch on to a character, which is why the constant works so well, because the constant is like, you have to latch on to the character because we're going to do this like plot fuckery with you. Like, I don't know how much you really feel the jeopardy on the boat on a rewatch with the constant, but at least in the first time I was like, oh man, he could just get snapped out of time again and then never come back and be like stuck in the past for all I know.
Oh, you definitely but feel it because they got Oscar winner Fisher Stevens there as Minkowski to like die. So you're like, that could happen to Desmond.
Bleed out through the nose.
Oh my God. If it could happen to Fisher Stevens, it could happen to anyone.
Yeah, I think going back to your original question, I don't think I'm ready to say that anyone works against their fate, but there are characters who are resistant to it for sure.
Absolutely. And that's the whole thing, right? Like Jack is resistant to this
constantly.
Idea that like, you know, we were brought here for a purpose, for a reason. You know, Locke is immediately on board and Jack is like, nah. as someone posted, he's like the kombucha girl from TikTok, where he's like,
we're gonna have a lock problem or not. We just let him push the button.
Do we still have a lock problem? Everybody seems to be friends in this episode.
But
everybody's
yeah,
real friendly.
It's an interesting question, and like this idea of the candidates, they're called candidates, but in the Buffy universe, similar characters are called potentials. And so that's sort of the idea that you want to latch onto, is like they're all potentials to do the big thing. But of course it's Jack, right? Of course it's Jack, or it's also Hurley. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's interesting.
Jack's the most obvious choice.
But
well, Jack might also, his purpose might only to be to do the big thing, which is something we'll get to when we get there, but like Hurley's a better candidate if it's like run the island.
Yeah.
Jack's a better candidate for it's like you need to do this fight right now with this thing that took John Locke's face.
Save the like I can fix it.
Yes.
Jack's
yes,
like I can
Jack.
Fix it. I can heal it. That's Hurley. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that seems
I could distribute the food
yeah.
and the light magic.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks for that email, Randy. And like, please, I think that, you know, I think maybe I should have, maybe trimmed Randy's email down a little bit, but like, I think this is the kind of lore stuff that people have been really pushing to have in the storm. And I know it's tough, especially for both of you guys who maybe have not, rewatched the entire show recently, but I think this is the kind of lore stuff that people want us to talk about. And like, we're going to try to keep talking about it. Because I think these...
Well, as long as we correct ourselves and then have opinions about those corrections, I'm perfectly fine with just, you know, taking what you guys say as correct.
Guys, I have like 8 more podcasts I have to record this week. So let's be done on that salty note from Dave. Is there anything else you want to talk about in terms of this episode or... Next week, Shannon dies, etc.
Yeah, Neil, remind us what's happening next week.
Next week is season 2, episode 6, Abandoned. It's a Shannon episode.
It's the
Shannon episode that remains. Yeah, it's great. It's another, I think we're in a really interesting transitional period for season 2. Like I mentioned in the opening, which I can now say in the storm, this episode and the next episode and then the other 48 days, those are the only episodes we don't see the hatch, right? There's like a 3-episode run here where we're not going to get any hatch stuff, and it's very interesting.
No more hatch chanting, no more pits, no more chanting.
Yeah, wait, is that true? Is that right? Is that what I read earlier?
No, I think that's correct.
Yeah.
Or at least definitely for Abandoned.
The hatch is also absent for the next 2 episodes, Abandoned and the other 48 days. It does not come back until Collision. And then it is in every remaining episode of season 2. So get ready to just have a lot of hatch stuff.
Boop.
It's our little
boop,
hatch.
Boop,
hatch vacation here.
Excellent. Until next week, when you say goodbye to Shannon, where can people find more of your work online? Joanna, I hear you got some podcasts coming up.
Yeah, I have a lot of podcasts this week. You can hear me on 5 episodes of Still Watching, covering both The Crown and The Mandalorian. You can hear me on Little Gold Men. You can hear me on the Boiler Room cast. We're talking about a great episode of my so-called life, with the one in which Ricky and Delia dance. It's a great episode.
Whoa.
It is a good episode. And it's the 25th anniversary of that episode, so it's a great episode.
Nice.
And and then you can hear me talking about Lost on this podcast. That's my life. Yeah.
And how about you, Neil Miller?
Well, you know, you can always get me at thefilmschoolrejects.com, where we are deeply enmeshed in our decade rewind, which we're doing all the best of the decade stuff. This week, the 100 best movies of the decade will be hitting the feeds. It's the most correct list ever produced, as far as I know. You can also get me on Twitter at Rejects, and don't forget to follow the show at Storm Podcast on the Twitter. We got polls. We got all kinds of fun stuff.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find me covering The Mandalorian over at Thrillist.com and talking about general pop culture things at Fighting in the War Room. It's a podcast. You can find it wherever fine podcasts are distributed. And even though I have joined the ranks of the fallen, I am still here every week to ask you to please not fall down, like it's a choice.